If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Right now, everyone's fearful of retail, and I think it's a fantastic time to get involved in retail. Now, that's if you have to have the right team, you have to go after the right centers, you have to go after the right demographics, right locations. All of those things are very, very, very important. But I think that I'm already starting to see opportunities in this asset class, unlike multifamily, unlike industrial.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Danny Newberry is the founder and president of Value Investment Group. He has built Value Investment Group into an integrated and successful firm that specializes in the acquisition, improvement, repositioning, and management of commercial investment properties. He has acquired more than 40 properties since its inception in 2008, and he has purchased and managed a few hundred multifamily units and over 800,000 square feet of retail, office, industrial, and multifamily properties totaling over $90 million in transactions. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. I appreciate it.
No, man, this is great. This is great. I love somebody coming on that has a little bit of I don't want to call it shiny object syndrome, because that's a negative, right? But somebody that doesn't necessarily just buy one asset class. And so I'd love, the same question I ask everybody who comes on: where'd you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I know I've got a lot of different asset classes, so I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, bounce around. I'm all over the country, but I really feel like we focus on the value add aspect of commercial assets. So, they're all pretty integrated from that aspect. And, my background is I came from, grew up I was born in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, and then moved to Southern California when I was about four. From there, my dad moved to Southern Utah. And so I followed him out there, and it was going from like a party to a church. So it was really interesting, but, love the mountains, fell in love with the outdoors. My wife and I met when we were in high school, and we started getting into, we were going to college, and then first year of college, took all the fun classes. Second year, they told me I had to get serious. So instead of continuing on, I got into a real estate course, bought a vacant 6-unit apartment building, turned it around. I think I was all in for about $180,000. And it appraised for like 350 6 months later. And I was like, why am I going to continue going to school for a degree that I don't have to make less money than I just made on this first deal? So the rest was history. My wife and I, we started buying a bunch of small multifamily properties, realized that we wanted to expand. That was right when the Great Depression happened. And we said, well, maybe we should move to a market where it got hit really, really hard. We were only about 2.5 hours from Las Vegas. So we said, heck, let's move to Vegas. So packed up our stuff, moved out there. We started buying fourplexes, sixplexes, tenplexes, all over the city. I mean, we were really focused on the class war zone, really rough, really dire need of CapEx, repairs, large vacancies. And that's where we got our start. So we thought we were being really smart by getting into these properties, buying them for dirt cheap back in 2009, 10, 11, and 12. And what we quickly realized was, number one was, man, where'd all the cash flow go? Well, it's the tenants tear it up. They eat it up, man. It's crazy with these type of properties. It's like you can't cash flow, but you can buy them so cheap. You can fix them up. And really where you make your money is when you flip them. So that's what we ended up doing. We sold all those. We ended up buying some larger apartment communities. So like 48 unit, 138 unit, and just scaling from there. We went to some different states with that. We went to Oklahoma. And ultimately, that's where we started to really see, hey, this is how you can scale your wealth, how you can scale your cash flow. And so we're like, okay, bigger is better. We definitely like that. Easier to manage. You can hire a team for that. But then we also, we kind of got the true triple net bug in us when I had an investor of mine who owned only commercial properties that were true triple net properties. And for your listeners that don't know, triple net is where your tenant pays for the common area maintenance, taxes, and insurance. versus on apartment buildings or single family, you pay for all that. So really your expenses can fluctuate significantly based on, you know, how well you can manage your property. And so with the commercial side, I said one day to myself, well, wait, if you're doing true triple net and you're investing in me, why don't you own any of this stuff? He goes, Danny, I don't want to work that hard. Light bulb went off and I said, well, shit. All right. I need to figure out what you're doing. So I ended up joining a mastermind group that was a really kind of all over the board, mostly retail, industrial, and multifamily, and a little bit of office, medical, and development. And so that's where I started to see the picture of different type of asset classes, you know, the opportunities, the pros and cons of each asset class, and decided to buy one. Basically, my goal at that first year was to go buy one of each asset class so I could understand them, I could manage them, and I could really see how to turn them around. And so they were all value add. They all had vacancy in one level or another. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, we loved it so much. That's really what we focus on, is value add true commercial property. So mostly retail, industrial, do a little bit of office, medical, still do some multifamily here and there. But I'd say my favorite asset classes are retail and industrial.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'd especially love to hear your thoughts on the retail side of things. You know, what makes a good retail investment? Because obviously that's something, you know, it's not the darling child of everyone's investment, you know, portfolio right now, just because of, you know, quote unquote, everything's going online, right? Which isn't necessarily true.
Well, I couldn't be more excited about it, to be honest, because that's exactly it. What does Warren Buffett say? You know, you want, when everyone's fearful, be greedy. When everyone's greedy, be fearful. Right now, everyone's fearful of retail. And I think it's a fantastic time to get involved in retail. Now, that's if you have to have the right team. You have to go after the right centers. You have to go after the right demographics, right locations. All of those things are very, very, very important. But I think that I'm already starting to see opportunities in this asset class, unlike multifamily, unlike industrial, where these properties are really overheated. Cap rates are so low, it's hard to get in, make a decent yield, you know, unless there's a big value add component to it. And those are just harder and harder to come by. And people are bidding the prices up more and more because there's so much demand for it.
Right.
So I really do like retail. What I specifically focus on is neighborhood shopping centers. So I'm not looking to buy the big power center with big box retail, you know, your 50,000 square foot boxes, your anchor centers that have very limited amount of tenants that can backfill that large of a space. I really like the 1 to 5,000 square foot bays where you have tons of different people, and 50% of America small owned businesses are in spaces like this, right? So they're in 1,000 square foot where it could be your Allstate guy, your barber, your local insurance guy, whatever it might be. There's a ton of different people in a pool of people to backfill these small spaces. So they're really easy to backfill. They're really easy to stay leased. And you can work with these people. If you've got, you know, 10 units and you lose one or two, it's not going to kill your cash flow as long as you bought it right. You know, even if you lost, 33 or four or five of them, as long as you bought it right. And that's the beauty of retail. You can buy these things really at the right price where the cash flow is unbelievable. It's super steady Eddie, and you're signing long-term leases. Unlike apartments where you get, you know, a 1 year lease, you may get, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10, 15 year deals where, you know, these people are locked in, you know, especially a lot of these national companies that take, you know, smaller bays like Subways and whatnot, where, you know, it's like, look, they'll sign a long-term lease. They're probably going to be there a long time. And, you know, you get them in there and it's kind of set it and forget it at that point. And again, they pay for all the CAMs, all the common area maintenance, their taxes, their insurance. They don't call you when their plumbing is backed up. They don't call you when, you know, there's an issue in the unit. That is all on them, man. It's a beautiful thing getting into the triple net business.
Right, right. And I think one of the things that especially more, and not that you're not, I'm going to say this and it's all going to come out wrong, so I apologize in advance. But the more savvy or people who are looking for a greater return, you know, obviously, you know, when you look at triple net lease on like a Burger King or something like that, those are trading in the fives, maybe sixes. Yeah. And so the returns on those just aren't, you know, for those of us who are looking for higher returns, it's not that attractive. But it sounds like you found a way in the neighborhood shopping center to really get the returns that most of us really want. you know, without having to then not, you know, and then making the deal work versus saying, you know, a triple net lease that just for me, you know, if like making a 5% return, just not, it's not going to work.
No, absolutely. And look, I don't go buy those 5-cap deals.
Right.
I have bought a Starbucks where it was a, maybe a 6-cap, maybe a 5.5, somewhere right in there. But I got seller financing with 10% down, 10-year fixed at 4% interest only. So my cash flow was through the roof. My down was very little, and I've got a long-term lease on a brand new building. So, you know, that made it make sense from the seller finance standpoint. But I will tell you, I love those single tenant deals if you can buy the right pad site. So I'll give you an example. I'm actually doing a deal right now with Starbucks, a build to suit, where we bought the building. It had a pad site. It was a neighborhood shopping center. Okay. And then in front of it, there's a pad site perfect for a national tenant. Well, we went out there, marketed it. We got Starbucks, signed a lease, and we're now building the space for them, which is going to cost us approximately $1.2 million. But the value of that when it's done is about $2.5 million. So we've got a ton of equity in that pad site, and we're going to have a 15-year lease signed by Starbucks Corporation, multi-billion corporation. Everyone knows them, right? So it's a beautiful deal, and I love that deal, but I wouldn't go be the guy that goes and pays $2.5 million for that Starbucks at the end of the day, but I would love to be the guy doing the build the suit for him.
Right, and you'd love to be the guy selling it to the guy that wants to pay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right.
Open, right, so either way, I'm good.
Right. No, that's fascinating. I mean, the way you make it sound so easy, you know, hey, we're going to go out and we're going to buy a bunch of stuff and it's all going to make money. It's going to be great. You mentioned three things early on that I'd love to kind of circle back on, which was your team, the right centers, and the demographics. Can we start on team? Because I know that you're an amazing person and you do awesome stuff, but I bet you've got a lot of help getting these things done.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's really important to have the right team, because if you don't, you can miss a lot of things in your due diligence. And, you know, at the end of the day, a team is what makes everything happen. So, you know, I've got a great team. I got my right-hand man, Gary, who's always, you know, he kind of does all the tedious stuff that I can't necessarily focus on. And so he really gets into the nitty gritty and gets into the details. And then we've got a great attorney that makes sure all the legal and the title and the Alta, everything's in line, right, for the pad site. And then it's ready to go, or the shopping center and what we're buying. And then we've got a great, you know, a tax accountant, make sure that, hey, we're not selling too quick. We're getting the most value out of that property, and we know what kind of depreciation we're going to get, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to have the right team. And I would say, you know, without that, it's really hard to scale. So you don't have to have a huge team, but you have to have a very effective one, right? So if you have just a couple guys that are really effective, know what you're doing, know what your strategy is, and you build that, you can really, really scale.
Now, when it comes to, I mean, I'm just thinking about this Starbucks deal. Like, okay, so you own the property. I mean, with that, then though, comes a leasing agent or somebody to market that that pad site in front. Then you've also got to find your builder. You've got to get quotes on that building. You've got to get, I mean, is that all stuff you're doing in house, or are you subbing all that stuff out?
So it's a mix, right? So on all my shopping centers and all my properties, I always hire a local boots on the ground leasing agent that specifically focuses on that asset class. So whatever it is, that's where they put their expertise and focus. One thing you can find is, like on CoStar, you can find the top 10 brokers for that asset class in any market, which is fantastic, because then you're like, hey, I'm looking at this specific asset class in this marketplace. You can find the top 10 guys. You want to call them all. And you're going to get a really good feel of what it's going to take, who they're going to go after, how long it's going to take, what the pricing is going to be, all of that stuff. So that's part of your due diligence, right? So yes, we do sub out, but we also do a lot of stuff in-house too. Well, we do our own marketing. I don't just rely specifically on that person to lease my property. Because if I sat around, you know, some of these brokers just don't work that hard, or, you know, they you never really know, right? Especially getting into a new market, unless you already have an existing relationship. So we're always doing stuff in-house too, and trying to bring, you know, prospects to our centers.
Right. Okay. That's awesome. That's more the operation side of things. How are you guys finding deals?
I mean, every which way. I mean, you know, we broker relationships, mailers, auctions, cold calling. You know, we have a lot of irons in the fire. And so that's really kind of our, you know, we're just looking under a lot of rocks to find that right opportunity. And so, you know, we really just, there's just all kinds of ways that deals come to us. I mean, it's not just one way works.
Right, right. No, understood. And that was going to be my question, because, you know, it takes full-time people in the acquisition side of things. I mean, if you're dropping mail, if you are having, you know, people placing cold calls, that means you're also doing all the research to find even the properties you'd be interested in. Because if you're trying to acquire off-market deals, that's a full-time job. You can devote just simply a full-time job to identifying and researching and then calling, finding these owners and calling them. So, I mean, I'd love to hear how you built, not necessarily what your strategy is in that, but like, how did you build out those team members? When did you bring them on, and when did it make sense to do so?
So you build it over time. You don't just start right at the beginning. You do what you can solo, right? When you're first starting out, I mean, it was just me. And then I brought on, you know, my project manager, and, you know, when we started doing everything together, and then we started hiring out subs. And then when it made sense and the cash flow and the cash was there, now we could start bringing people in-house to scale, right? So like right now, I'm actually increasing my team, and we're hiring on a few new people, another acquisition guy. We're bringing on another assistant project manager, you know, so we're looking to continually expand, but you don't do that day one. It's just, it's a constant growth thing that you're always kind of like, okay, where am I in the process? How much opportunity do I have, and where do I need help? And then as you get to your max capacity, then that's when you start to add those team members.
Right, right, right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Now, you guys have an interest, or you own, excuse me, you also own industrial assets.
Yep, love it. Love it, love it.
Right. That's a hot, industrial is a hot place for institutional money. How do you compete with the institutional investors in industrial?
So institutional, for the most part, they're going after $10+ million deals, and they're looking for stabilized assets, or looking for, you know, pretty much like a steady Eddie coupon clipper. So what I am is I'm the guy that goes finds the value add, the centers that, you know, the properties that need TLC, right? So they're dilapidated, they need CapEx, they're underfunded, the markets are under rent, the leasing isn't at top notch. There's vacancy at the property for, you know, a number of different reasons. And we figure out the problem and we create a solution. So we come in, we find something, value add, fix it up, fill it up. And then at that point, we decide, okay, are we going to hold this for the long term and cash flow it? Or are we going to flip it to the guy that wants that coupon clipper, right? So we never sell a value add deal. We are the ones buying it, fixing it up, and then selling it off to the guys that just want that steady Eddie, you know, paycheck.
Right, right, right. Now that I think that makes a lot of sense. And that was going to be my question, is what are things, how do you identify in industrial? Well, I mean, I know you mentioned it there, but it still isn't that clear to me. So forgive me if I'm a slow learner, but like what makes industrial, what are the value add components of industrial? I know you mentioned it. Maybe we can hit it again.
So a lot of times I'm seeing below market rate rents right now. It's a really hot asset class. So the vacancies aren't super apparent, aren't a ton of, just a few years ago, you'd find stuff that was, you know, would be 50% vacant, 100% vacant. Now, a lot of these properties are being filled up, but the thing is, rents are way below market. And the reason being is most landlords will not offer TIs, tenant improvement dollars, free abated rent, right? So these things go a long way when someone comes in and they, you know, a lot of industrial buildings kind of look like shit. And excuse my language, but they do.
Sure.
And so what we like to do is we like to say, okay, what can we do to make this an appealable property for our tenant, right? Can it be additional landscaping, monument signage, you know, fix the parking lot, you know, crack fill the pots, reseal and coat. Can we, do a new roof? Can we do new HVAC? Can we add on to the building? Can we subtract? A lot of these buildings have an office component and a warehouse component. And a lot of times, you know, if you can reduce the office component or add to it, that's going to be really a good flexible point for potential tenants coming in. And then you go to them and say, hey, what would you like inside? Do you want LED lighting? Would you like new carpet and paint in the office? You know, would you like us to epoxy the floor and the, you know, vanilla shell it, make it nice and clean? And it feels good when you walk in, like you can see your business in there instead of a lot of these are dark and dingy and cold and wet. And, you know, there's roof leaks and this and that. Well, you need to get rid of all that. You need to make it a really nice, presentable area where people can see them operating a successful business out of it.
Right, right. And do you bring boots? I know you said you have boots on the ground, like a leasing agent, but those are very hands-on projects, I think. Like if you're going in and you're looking at this and you're developing plans, how do you guys do that remotely?
So a lot of times we have So we'll hire on local guys, right? So we come up with our business plan. Let's say, hey, here's our CapEx, what we're planning on doing. And then we go and find references for contractors and people that will do the work. And we get lots of bids to make sure that, you know, hey, look, we're in line with what the market is. And we've done it enough times. It's not our first rodeo. We know when something's overpriced, right?
Sure.
Obviously, we have good contracts in place with the contractor. So if the work's not done properly, we haven't paid out all the cash and, you know, they can just simply walk away and not finish. So we always make sure we protect ourselves from that. And look, a lot of times we'll, you know, these leasing agents, they know contractors that are doing the work because they're the ones bringing tenants. They need to do TIs and CapEx to, you know, go in and bring these tenants in. So they know who to call.
Right. Right. Yeah. They know who to call, they know who to get it done. Yeah. I was just really curious from a CapEx side of things, how do you develop that initial list on these buildings? I mean, especially again, you know, I'm thinking more of the remote side of things. Are you guys going to each and every site and walking it personally and saying, okay, this is the 500 things I want done, or is it I'm relying on the leasing agent to tell us how to turn this?
It's a mix of both because it's a team effort. Every market's a little different and you don't want to go above and beyond on something like that isn't going to give you a return, right? So you go to the leasing agents, they know what the tenants expect. They know what the market expects. And then you go to what that is, right? So you sit there, you have a conversation. What is it going to take to lease this space at the best possible rent with the best possible tenant? And then you make that game plan, right? And then you move forward with that.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you've got a deal that we kind of briefly talked about offline. It was a property you're looking at here in Memphis. Do you mind sharing this kind of some of the specifics on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So small little deal. I want to say it's around 15,000 square feet off of Goodman Road over in Horn Lake. And it was on auction. It was bank owned, L&R owned. And we, you know, it was 50% vacant, but it was newer construction, 2004 construction. So we liked the components. We had the traffic counts were over 35,000 cars a day. We really liked that. The neighboring tenants were a lot of nationals. So we really liked that. And we said, okay, why is this property so vacant? Well, number one was the previous owner bought it at the hype of the last, you know, recession. So he bought it in 2005 or six, you know, highest price possible, went through the recession, lost half the tenants, couldn't continue paying the bills, gave it back to the bank. Bank took it over, owned it for like 4 years before they took it to market, and they didn't do anything with it. They did no CapEx. They didn't do any leasing. They literally just kept it on the books until they were ready to, you know, get it off the books and took it to market. We were the winning bidder at $780,000. So that was about $50 a square foot. We had Allstate in there. We had a restaurant or a donut place in there. We had a haircut place in there. We have American cashing place. It's can't remember the
Checks
name.
Checks Cashed or something like that.
Something like that. I can't remember. Yeah.
Right.
50% vacant. What we did is in the first year, we bought it for $780. We leased it. We brought in two new tenants. And one was Casa Perez Grocer, which they're all around. There's, I don't know, four or five of them around town in Memphis.
Yep.
And they came to us and said, look, we'll take your biggest space and we'll sign a five-year deal. They wanted $100,000, I believe, in tenant improvement dollars. And they were going to put in $400,000 of their own money to build out the space. So it's a $500,000, you know, build out for that space. And we contributed part of it. We gave them 6 months of free rent. And they're actually about to open next month. So we're really excited about it, but check this out. They signed on 6,000 feet. I believe they were at like 10 bucks a foot. And I'll just give you the numbers of what this looks like. At 6,000 feet at 10 bucks a foot, triple net is 60,000 NOI. At an 8 cap, that the value of their lease is 750,000. Okay, so one lease, almost $1 million in value right there. Stabilized our center. We filled the one last spot. So we're 100% occupancy. We just got a valuation of $2.1 million on the property. So we bought it for $780. You know, we put in $100,000 for this tenant. I think we gave the other tenant that we put in, I want to say we gave him $20,000. We renewed another tenant that was there. I think it was Allstate that we renewed on another five-year deal. And we gave them $10,000 in tenant improvement dollars. So, I mean, we're all in for probably $900,000, you know, give or take somewhere around there. And in 1 year, it's worth 2.1, right? So, you know, I'd say that's a pretty good deal. It'll cash flow, you know, north of about 10,000 a month, give or take. Or sorry, let's see here. It was, yeah. We're north of 100,000 a year in cash flow when all the tenants are paying. or we can sell it and make north of $1 million, right? So, you know, it's a good contrast. And if now if I lose a couple tenants, I still have enough cash flow, even with the new loan and refinancing and pulling out all our cash, that I can still lose a bunch of tenants and still be all right at the property. So those are the kind of deals that we like. There's a lot of upside, a lot of meat on the bone, a lot of cash flow, but you got to do the work to fill them up, fix them up, and then, you know, release them, right? So that's what we did.
Right, right. No, that's brilliant. I love that. I love that. What on that valuation, was that a valuation based upon the income or just the value of the hard asset itself?
Both. So it was replacement cost, NOI, net operating income, and then your sale comps.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's really cool. Congrats on that deal. That's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about how you cash, or not how you cash flow, but how you funded your projects early on, and then how do you fund them now?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we started, it was all about relationships. I want to say my first sixplex that I bought, it was one of my best friend's dad that gave me a hard money loan at 8%. And he said, you know, he's like, yeah, I'll give you, it was 150 grand to buy the property from the bank. 30,000 I needed for capital improvements. So I borrowed 180,000 at 8%, fixed it up, filled it up. And then it appraised, like I said, in the 350 range, and refinanced, gave him back all his cash. And now I own this thing. And yeah, that's how we got started. But then we started doing more of that. I got, you know, friends and family involved to come in and partner. And now, you know, I only have a couple partners that I really kind of continually work with. So I'm not out there doing big syndications or anything, but I've got good relationships with lenders, with hard money lenders, with mortgage brokers, with credit unions, with life insurance companies. So we kind of have the whole gambit of what do we need for this specific deal? Are we going to go in for short-term debt, bridge debt, hard money, whatever it is, to get in there, fix it up, and then refinance once we've done our business plan in, you know, the next 6 to 12 months? Or are we going to go in and put long-term debt right away because we like where, you know, things are at with the property, and we're going to hold this one long-term, and we don't know where rates or you know, what the market's going to be like in 12 months from now. So, I mean, every deal is a little bit different, but, you know, the cash is, you know, it's always thinking of like what your game plan is with the property. And so that's how we fund our deals. It's just depending on what our plan is. Is it a long-term, short-term, you know, midterm hold?
Sure, sure. No, that makes all the sense in the world. And you guys took a little different route in that you've really developed a few key partnerships, it sounds like, that have really helped you guys fund most of what you do. I know, well, obviously a lot of people we talk to are doing large syndications and things like that with pooling investors' money. So I was just curious how that worked out. Let's jump here into the final four if we can, Danny. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Hang out with people that are going to make you elevate your game. Absolutely. Every time I hang out with those kind of people and continue to hang out with them, I just keep up in my game, man, because you can't hang out with them if you're not up in your game.
Right, right. That's a great point. That's a great point. I hung up the phone with a conversation with somebody this morning, and I felt smarter when I hung up. I was like, wow, this guy's a lot smarter than me. So those are always fun feelings to have. Number two is, what is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Morning routine, man. I mean, you know, it's all about setting your day up for success, you know, first thing in the morning. So having those right routines, habits, you know, getting up, working out, meditating, you know, making sure you fuel your body with lots of water and you know, really just focusing on getting your vision and your plan and your day planned out. So that way you have a really successful day. So I think that's one of the key components to, you know, growth and really staying on top of your game.
Right. Love that. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
And I'm improving neighborhoods one deal at a time, you know, improving local businesses, helping them get to the next level in their business by being a landlord that, you know, the exact opposite of a slumlord. We're there to help them. What can we do to help increase your business to reach its potential? Right. And so these tenants love us because we go in there, we fix up their units, we fix up the exterior, we manage it professionally. And we're increasing the neighborhood's value by doing that and the tenant's value. So yeah, one deal at a time.
Right, right. That's awesome. Danny, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Go to my website, valueinvestmentgroup.com, and you can reach out to us through there. And we always looking for, you know, if anyone wants a joint venture or something, they have a commercial deal and they need someone to come partner with them, we're always interested.
Sounds great. Danny, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Really appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.